Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And I work at a place called the California Academy of Sciences. We are a 150-year-old research institution located in Golden Gate Park. We focus mainly on biodiversity research, and we have an aquarium and a natural history museum and a planetarium all wrapped up in one building in Golden Gate Park. And if you get a chance to go visit, it's a really cool place to be. We get about 1.5 million visitors a year. And it might be a little bit strange that I'm speaking here. I'm not an epidemiologist. I don't even work in the medical profession. But what we do have at the Academy is a very similar set of challenges to what you all face when it comes to engaging more effectively with your audiences about complex, controversial, misunderstood information and topics. I think a lot of what you sort of said in your last, in your presentation leads very well into what I'm going to say here. I hope that some of what I have to say kind of surprises or shocks you a little bit, because over the past 5 years, I found myself surprised and shocked quite a bit as we've gotten better and better at engaging with our audiences about these issues. So I have no relationships to disclose. I think one of the really critical things to think about when we think about our audiences and the way that we talk about complex issues with them is there's a certain amount of irony, right? We want to engage with our audiences more effectively. That means that we don't just want to increase their education levels or literacy. We want them to grapple with these topics in new ways. We want to shift their perspectives. And hopefully, we want them to change their behavior. That's what we all kind of want to come about from these efforts that we have, these campaigns, these communications, these educational programs. But there's a certain amount of irony is that we all work in institutions where science is very foundational, right? Science is the key to medicine. It's the key to biodiversity research. It's the key to sustainability and conservation. But we have chosen for most of our history to ignore core foundational ideas about the science of human behavior, right? There's this whole range of different disciplines within the science of human behavior that for most of the time we have basically ignored. And I kind of want to give you two examples of how we do that. In terms of how we communicate information and seek to engage with our audiences. And the first one is something called I call the dump truck approach. And that's kind of the concept that, you know what, people are rational. And if we give them all of the information, they're going to take that information, they're going to process it rationally, they're going to come to new conclusions, and that's going to change the way they see the world and what they do. And so we just dump truck as much education on people as we can, as much information on them. The other approach, which I've seen quite a bit in the conservation community, and you've probably seen somewhat in your field as well, is kind of the crisis framing sky is falling approach, right? People screaming that climate change is the end of the world, it's going to destroy everything that we know. It's really kind of an approach which says we want to make people panicked and scared and concerned, and that'll get them moving, right? So these two approaches, as well as many others, are not working that well. Are not very effective at engaging with their audiences because they violate a number of sort of well-understood rules about human behavior, how human beings take in information, how they process it, and how they make their decisions. So I'm going to give you kind of a list of things that we have found at the Academy that don't work so well. And these are very well understood among scientists who study human behavior. So when issues are messaged as crises, it tends to shut people down. We've seen that a lot in the climate change field. We've tried to sort of scare people and shock people into movement, and the opposite happens. They tend to tune out, they tend to disengage, they put up these walls around the issue, and they don't think about it. It doesn't work if you make people feel guilty or individually responsible as well. And I think there's probably quite a bit of this in the epidemiology field, is if you point your finger at one person, one individual, and say, this is your responsibility, this is your fault, you have to fix this. People tend to shut down as well. And I'll talk to a way to get around that in a second. People also are smart enough to understand that if you're talking to them about very big issues, these are systemic issues involving big systems, and then we say, for instance, with climate change, the world is baking, go home and change your light bulbs, right? People are smart enough to go, me changing my light bulbs is not going to solve this problem, right? And I think there are probably some examples you could find in your field as well where we do this. If you talk about issues in faraway places or on different temporal scales, people also disengage. The climate change community has, for a long time, tried to use polar bears as ambassadors, right? The Arctic is melting. Polar bears are beautiful creatures. The problem is very few people live by the poles, right? So when you tell them about something that's happening in a faraway place or in a faraway time, as in climate change is going to impact your grandchildren, they also tend to say, you know what, that's serious, I'm concerned about it, if you pull me on it, I'll tell you I'm concerned, but when it comes to changing what I do, It's not my first priority. My first priority is getting my kids to school. My first priority is getting a paycheck. It's all the things that happen on a day-to-day basis. So if people don't see that an issue involves them very personally, very directly, very viscerally in their day-to-day lives, you're not going to get much traction. Messengers. People tend to identify very well with people they feel are like them, right? That are in their tribe, that share their values. So it doesn't work really well to have scientists come and speak at church congregations, as we have discovered. You really need to have your messengers have some kind of connection with your audiences, whether they be the general public or a specific demographic. You need to find the right messengers for your message. It's really, really important. We are lucky at the Academy, we're considered trusted messengers. We poll our audiences, and over people say they trust us on issues of science, and so we have that built in. And so your challenge is to find the people, maybe it's the CDC, maybe it's other people, who have trust among your audiences. Has anyone heard of something called social norming? So social norming is kind of the concept that people want to be just like other people. It's very similar to the messenger thing. They want to do the same types of things that their friends and neighbors and people in their community are doing. One of the issues with a lot of the messaging that we've been doing in the environmental and sustainability field over the years is we have said something like, nobody is recycling plastic. It's awful. Only 5% of plastic gets recycled. You should recycle. Well, what that actually does in the field of human understanding and human behavior is when you say most people aren't recycling, what you're doing is you're giving that person a license to not recycle because they are just want to be like everybody else. And so if you say don't be like everybody else, be different, it's not going to work so well. So what you want to do is you want to emphasize the social norming of there are people just like you who are recycling plastic, right? It's a much, much more effective way. Number seven is one of the reasons why the dump truck approach does not work, is facts which contradicts a person's worldview are presented in an attempt to change their beliefs is not very effective. And what I mean by that is there's been a lot of studies that say if you take a group of people or a person who's convinced of something, and their conviction is in some way based on their values and the way that they see themselves and their role and their identity in the world, and you sit them down and they have something wrong and you say, I'm going to show you all the evidence. You can't argue with this evidence. This is why you're wrong. You need to change the way you believe. What that actually does oftentimes is it backfires. It actually reinforces a person's belief about their mistaken beliefs. It's kind of counterintuitive, but the best example that I heard is, think about a year and a half, 2 years ago, there was a cult believing the world was going to come to an end. Do you guys remember about these guys, right? So they were convinced that on a certain day the world was going to come to an end and they were going to ascend and something was going to happen. And that day came and went and the world did not end. And so newspaper reporters came and interviewed these people, and they had expected that they would have changed their belief system. That, you know what, it didn't happen, obviously you were wrong. Well, what had actually happened is those people had convinced themselves that they were more right than ever, they had just gotten the date wrong. So information alone is not the way to engage more effectively with people. It can be definitely part of the equation, but what we're trying to do is not just increase literacy, we're trying to talk to them and communicate with them in more effective ways. All right, so there are a number of tools to sort of overcome these challenges. At the Academy of Sciences, we did a lot of training. One specific type of tool that's known as framing, you may have heard of it in the political realm, but it's very valid in a lot of other areas as well. It's just one tool. There are a lot of other evidence-based approaches to communicating more effectively with people. There's something called social marketing, which is really effective as well. It's all about removing barriers and increasing incentives. There's sort of a whole feel around this, and I don't want you to think that framing is the only thing you should think about, but it's an effective tool and it's worked really well for us. So myself and another Academy of Sciences public presenter went and we did a 6-month-long training course on framing, how to frame climate change and ocean issues more effectively. And we learned quite a bit from it, and we've put this into practice in the Academy, and it's been working really well for us. So I just want to tell you a little bit about that. So how people process information, right? We're not blank slates. We come to the table with a whole host of prior experiences, which we refer to when we receive new information, right? The moment we hear something new, our brain goes back and tries to find something similar that it can use to find a context for. The way a story is told triggers certain responses based on those prior experiences and people's belief systems and values. And it can really impact how someone receives information, whether they modify it inside their head or whether they reject it entirely. So this means, and this was referred to, if you have scientists or medical industry professionals speaking one language and you have the general public or a specific demographic which does not speak that language, especially in the area of uncertainties and things like that. Oftentimes, they butt against each other. And a message is often lost or backfired, you know? And there's a saying that if facts don't fit the frame, then the facts are rejected, not the frame. So, frames are a great way to address a lot of these problems. It's really important to remember that how we say something matters as much or more, maybe, than what we say. And frames are a great way to organize central ideas on an issue. They can make complex topics more relevant, and they can help us communicate things like why might an issue be a problem, who might be responsible, and what should be done about it. Oftentimes, the simplest frames are the most effective. You know, we all, as people in the scientific field or the medical field, we tend to get very wordy, right? The public's not, in general, very wordy. And so oftentimes, the best frames are really simple ones. And I'll give you two examples. One is two words, tax relief. Tax relief is a much, much more effective frame than tax reduction. Why is that? Well, when you talk about tax relief, you are implying through those words, triggering to people's brains the idea that there is some kind of oppression happening right now. There's something weighing down on people. And when you change their taxes, when you lower them, all of a sudden you're relieving someone from this pressure, right? You're doing something good. You're helping them out. And so tax relief has pulled something like 80% of the people believe in tax relief. When you talk about tax reduction, it gets more like 50-50. Water is life is also another great frame that we found in the aquarium community, is the fact that just saying water is life triggers all of the memories and understandings people have of why water is so important. It's a great frame. So what is framing? You know, framing is the setting of an issue within an appropriate context. The intention, I think this is really important, the intention is not to deceive or manipulate, but to make credible science more accessible. Whenever you say something, you're framing an issue. You are engaging in framing whether you know it or not. And you might as well take the opportunity to be as effective as you can, right, to understand this. I don't really have the time to go into a whole sort of education about how to do framing, but I would say it's worth looking into if you're the type of person who's trying to engage with an audience on a complex issue. Something that was really reinforced for us, and we used a lot of actually examples from the epidemiology field, is sort of this idea of episodic versus thematic framing. And episodic is sort of like, here's a problem, it's an individual problem, it's a single problem, it's not connected to larger systems, it's without context. So for instance, you know, someone who has a value of independence and self-reliance, that's who they think they are, they're American, they feel this, when they look at epidemics, they say, you know what, that is the problem of the parent. That is the problem of the child. It's up to them to fix this because it's bad parenting or it's just poor diet nutrition. But the reality is there's a much larger system and a context to this problem. That's why whole neighborhoods, whole demographics share this problem, right? It's not a problem of individual people. It's just the situation that they're in. So in reality, there might be a lot of problems with limited access to healthy food, education, and a social support network which would help people not be obese. So it's this idea that when you are talking about issues, we want to connect it to the larger context. Because if people are considering an issue or problem as small and individual, they're not going to be able to consider communal solutions because the problem is seen as individual, the problem is not seen as communal. So I would highly recommend that when you talk to people about issues where there's a greater context, make that greater context plain. Property frame messages may contain a number of sort of components. Okay, got 2 minutes. The first of which is tested values, and this is really important. A value approach is one that says, hey, we need to start where our audiences are and where we are, not where we wish they would be. So let's find the values that we all share together around this issue that our audience shares, and let's start the conversation by talking about those values. At the Academy of Sciences, we have a coral reef dive program where we have recently integrated a framed script into about ocean acidification. Ocean acidification is a complex, misunderstood topic. It's challenging for us. And in the past, we have tried to dump truck 5 minutes of scientific information on our guests about calcium carbonate and hydrogen ions and how all the chemistry works in the water, and we have had very little success. So what we did this time around is we took framing and said, hey, our audiences share the values of interdependence and responsible management. So we talked to our audiences at the start of this talk about the fact that we all care about the ocean. We all share value in the ocean. The ocean has many benefits for us. We find it beautiful. We want to protect it. And that's how we start the conversation. We don't start the conversation with information. We use something called social math, which is the idea of taking very, very big numbers and changing them into kind of more more easily understood kind of thing. Like when that big chunk of ice fell off the Arctic ice sheet, you could say how many square kilometers it is. Or you could say it's about the size of Manhattan. And when you say it's the size of Manhattan, people understand it much more tangibly. Trusted messengers I talked about. Make sure that you have trusted messengers. And you want to adopt a reasonable balance and informed tone, right? The sky is falling is not going to work. Hysteria is not a very valid way to go. So we're trusted messengers. We're seen as scientifically valid, but continue to hold on to that trust, but use more effective ways of doing that. So this is the dive show where we integrated the framing. In the past, we weren't having much luck. We use this new framed approach, and we do surveys of our visitors, and something like 85% of our visitors were able to talk back to us about how acidification happened, how it worked, and what should be done about it. So it was really, really successful for us. So that's just one example of using kind of evidence-based tools and approaches. I highly encourage you to delve into the science of human behavior if you're trying to do a better job. And that's it. Are there any questions?
Everything about engagement and disengagement and what the reasons are, that's just fascinating. It's brought up all kinds of thoughts in my mind. I wonder if you could talk just a little about how that differs between adults and children, or whether you have to consciously separate your efforts, or if at all the truths are evident for all ages.
So I think that that's a really, really good question. I think it's really important to understand who your audience is. At the Academy of Sciences, we tend to have an audience of all ages. We have young kids, parents, grandchildren. It's very wide range. So what we try and do is most of our public programs is we sort of select, like, this is going to be a dive program that ages 8 and up can understand. This is going to be an exhibit for ages 12 and up. You know, this is going to be a program for ages 2 and up. So we gather a lot of research about where our audiences are, and we try to create programs and exhibits and educational efforts that will contact all of them. And when you talk about values, you can say, well, you know, little kids understand the value of sharing, you know, they've been talked about. So find a value that resonates with that entire group, whoever your audience is, and design all your language that's going to kind of connect to the lowest up. But it's important to realize that some of these issues are complex, and they're not designed for all ages. There's a lot of climate change education or ocean acidification education that is not great for young kids. It's a little scary. So we don't try and engage with them on that. We try and talk to them about solutions and ways that they can help the world. So just know your audiences and be very selective about how you're targeting them. So for us, what we did, yeah, so her question was, how do we know when we've been successful at getting our message across? Well, you have to try and define what you mean by good engagement. And that can be defined a number of ways. For us, we've started out this program with, we want people to understand, say, ocean acidification. We want them to understand what it is, the basics of how it works, and what the solutions are. And so that's basically what we surveyed them after the dive show, is we said, did you hear about something affecting the ocean? And 87% of people from a 20-minute program were able to understand those 3 minutes of ocean acidification, say, I heard about that issue. It's acid going into the water. When we asked them how it worked, they were able to tell us very basically that the ocean's chemistry was changing. And when we think about general audiences, we often think of them as they have science as kind of a second language, right? They have a pretty basic understanding of science, most people. So that's sort of the target we're shooting for, is we don't want them to start talking to us about equations and chemical reactions. We want them to be able to give us the basics. And at the end of the dive show, we talk to people about solutions. We talk to them about communal solutions, such as supporting public transportation, supporting renewable energy projects. It wasn't about individually what I can do. It was about what we can do. And so at the end of the dive show, after those 20 minutes, we asked them, did you hear about any solutions? And 92% were able to talk to us about communal solutions. So that's how we judged our positive impact now. Further down the line, we would like to make a better effort of giving people specific action items that they can do, specific things that they can do, and finding a way to measure those. Maybe it's signing up for a website or a newsletter online. Maybe it's texting a bit of information. Maybe it's, you know, we think that we can use technology to judge how our impacts are once they leave our walls, which is a challenge. But you have to find a way to establish some kind of communication or community, which you continue talking to people and seeing what impacts your. Now, if you're talking about a very large public issue, like you're trying to change the way that a whole neighborhood works or a whole city works or a whole general population, if you do a big enough campaign and you're successful enough, you'll start to see changes in the general population. But that's a very, very lofty goal.
Thank you, Rich. Mm-hmm.